Welcome to Three People, Three Brain Cells, the only podcast with three people who have a total of three brain cells. This episode, we'll be discussing video games alongside our guest, Thomas Swintle. Thank you for tuning in, and I wholeheartedly hope that you enjoy the episode.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Three People, Three Brain Cells. I'm Catherine Ma. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jonathan Ma. Our guest today is Thomas Swintle. So Thomas, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello everyone, my name is Thomas, and I know a lot about video games because that's all I've been doing for the past, 6 months that we've been quarantined.
Thanks for being here today, Thomas. It's great to have two, I think Jonathan's also would consider himself as very knowledgeable about video games, whereas I am, as always, deeply uneducated. So we're going to talk a little bit about video games, sort of what are they, who plays them, more about the art form as well as sort of the political discourse, the social discourse involving them. So Jonathan, let's talk a little bit about what are video games?
Okay, I'm just going to read off the Google definition that I have here on my computer. Video games are a game, or I guess games, that are played by electronically manipulating images produced by a computer program on a television screen or other display screen. So, you know, it's a very, very sort of wide and nebulous term, and we're just talking about sort of games that can be played electronically using some sort of computer or smart device. Right. So to sort of go further in on this brief or this sort of introduction for this topic, a few other questions that we're going to be answering are things like, hey, what are the kinds of video games? And also, I think I'm going to ask Thomas to tell you guys a little bit about sort of the development and the sort of distribution and publishing of video games. So like I said before, video games are just a very sort of vast and nebulous sort of term or categorization of products. So oftentimes when people hear about video games, they think of some specific things. Like a lot of people will instinctively think of, you know, first-person shooters, which are games in which you shoot the bad guys, right? But the truth is that there are a lot and a lot and a lot of different sort of types of games, and there are a lot of different kind of genres that exist to kind of summarize what these are. So you have things like puzzle games, you have MMOs, which are massively multiplayer online games, you have real-time strategy games, again, first-person shooters, so a lot of things sort of exist. So, not really to dwell on this, just basically the point is there are a lot of different kinds of games, a lot of different kinds of things will qualify as video games, so just kind of to keep that in mind as we go forward with our discussion. So another thing that's pretty important, just for sort of this primer, this sort of briefer introduction, is a bit more about like the development and publishing and distribution and selling of video games. So Thomas, if you'd like to sort of enlighten us on that aspect.
So they're quite comparable to movie development in that there are studios, pretty large studios, that work on developing the game over many years, and they spend countless hours working on these games, so developing the story, the graphics, and all the code that goes into it. So obviously with the studios, there's different sizes of the studios. So there's large, big studios. There's also legacy studios like Nintendo that have been around for a long, long time, ever since like the first video game basically. And there's newer studios like Square Enix that are still big, however, have recently been creative relative to like Nintendo. So apart from these big studios that usually create AAA games, so this is the highest class or highest quality of games that are released. Apart from these, there's also indie studios, which oftentimes, or a lot of the time, have much, much smaller teams than these larger studios. So it takes them a lot longer to make games usually. However, usually you can see that there's more passion in those games, and usually these games are either flops or big hits. I personally haven't seen a lot of in the middle, like that it's meh. A lot of them are just like either really popular or kind of like no one plays them. Basically, games are sold on various platforms. The most popular one by far, which basically has like a monopoly over selling games, is Steam. So basically companies have an account on Steam and they release their games to the public, and they're sold through this platform. But recently there's been the emergence of various other platforms like this. So the Epic Games Store, for example, they had their popular game Fortnite on it. So if you wanted to get the game, which everyone was playing, you had to use their store, and that obviously got them popularity. And then there's also places like Origin, which is EA, this game studio's own store. And then there's also secondhand markets. So G2A, that's the most popular secondhand market for video games, where basically it's just peer-to-peer selling. And then obviously there's also eBay and Kijiji, but I don't know anyone who's ever used those to buy games.
So we've heard a lot about just sort of who's making the games and sort of how are they being distributed. But just quickly, why buy these games in the first place, right? Like, why, like, what's the point of games, I guess I'm saying, which maybe sounds a little bit like your sort of suburban Karen, but, you know, why play games at all?
Well, okay, I think that there are quite a few aspects, you know, there are quite a few reasons that you could talk about. I'm just going to talk about, like, the elephant in the room here, or the most obvious one, which is just the idea of entertainment, you know, just doing something that makes, that you find fun and, you know, something that you enjoy. So that is by far the biggest reason that people play video games, and it's generally the reason why, you know, why people have specific games that they really like to play and then they play a lot of. It's usually because those are games that they have the most fun playing, right? Like, I know Thomas can probably relate to this. Catherine, I'm sure you can to some extent relate to this, even though you don't really play that many video games nowadays, you know, at least in the past, you know, when we used to play, like, Minecraft and stuff, and, you know, you probably have found that fun, right? So that's obviously the biggest reason, but I think that there are some sort of deeper reasons that are either, like, well, you know, there's some that are sort of underlying or related, and then there are some other things, right? So I think that one thing that a lot of people don't really understand, if they're not people who play a lot of video games, or at least online video games, is that I find that games are actually a really good sort of platform or a really good sort of way to be social with other people. So, you know, a lot of multiplayer games you'll play, like, with a lot of your friends, you know? So there is a server, actually, for our school, like an IB kernel by server specifically, and it's like, I don't really check the server a lot, but every time I go on, there are, like, dozens of people all in call, all, like, talking to each other and, like, having fun and, like, just chilling and playing video games, right? Like, I know myself, you know, I play League of Legends a lot, which is a very popular sort of online game, and I don't even like the game that much, frankly speaking. I actually kind of hate the game, but I just use it as a platform to sort of hang out with my friends and have fun, and I think that that is something that is really valuable, especially considering that, like, you don't need, you know, like, anyone can join. You don't need to, like, meet up somewhere specific, and the activity itself inherently gives you guys something to do and something to talk about. So I think that it can be really valuable in that sense, and also just sort of, even outside of playing together, just, again, giving sort of a topic to talk about or a topic to discuss. Like, I know I've talked to some of my friends about, it's going to sound kind of weird and nerdy, but, like, the most mathematically efficient item purchases in League of Legends, for example, and stuff like that. So I think that that is definitely, there is definitely a really social aspect to playing video games, at least online video games.
Yeah, the only, so I agree with that, but the only thing is, it's like, after a while of doing that, I find that, personally, I just kind of, like, feel like that there's no point to, sometimes, that there's no point in, like, maybe going and actually meeting someone in person, because we can just, like, have fun socializing, playing a game and something like that, and you just don't need to put in, like, the effort to, like, I don't know, bus somewhere and meet up with someone and do something. So I feel like it's good, like, the video games are good because, like, yeah, you socialize with other people, but then I don't know if it's bad that I feel like I just kind of sometimes don't want to go outside of my house. But I feel like in the long term, it definitely can be.
So everything in moderation, really. Okay, I'm just going to add quickly. I wanted to talk. I know that I like the games noob over here, but specifically about artistic value because I do watch video essays online, so I sort of know some stuff about this. All I know about games is just video essays online. Basically, there is definitely an artistic value to games. So in the sense of not just the actual artwork, which is, again, like actual art, which is definitely part of it, but also in terms of storytelling, in terms of also, I think, utilizing sort of the actual platform of games to be able to tell a story or able to craft an experience that can't otherwise be replicated in other forms of media. So I think I watched a video essay that was sort of talking about how they were using like a case study of a specific game and how you were able to foster a relationship between the player and sort of this other character that you can't replicate in like, or sort of you're forming like a bond with this fictional character that is impossible to replicate in like non-interactive forms of media, like a movie, which I thought was actually quite cool.
Yeah, I think that that's cool. And I think that I totally agree where it's like, I think that video games are at the point where I think they should be considered an art form. I think that there are a lot of dumb sort of games that are made with no intention other than to, like, sort of get as much money out of you as possible, like, suck your wallet dry. You know, I think, or, like, you know, really quick, low-effort games that are put on, like, the App Store or something just to make a bit of money or monetization off of advertisement and stuff like that. I think that that is definitely something that exists. But at the same time, If you've played a lot of these games and, you know, you feel the narrative experience and stuff like that, it's also very hard to... Well, I think it's really easy to oftentimes make the comparative of... Or the comparison of, like, being really sucked into the world of a video game, the narrative of a video game, similar to how you might be really invested in, like, say, a film or, say, like, the story or the narrative of a novel.
Yeah, what's also interesting sense. Is I think I've watched videos about stuff like games like the Stanley Parable, which are very much like sort of also commenting on games themselves, and they very much use sort of, I guess, like a meta narrative, if you guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are also a lot of games that, well, you know, you talked about the meta narrative or commenting on like video games or the industry, but obviously there are also games that comment on other things and other sorts of, you know, aspects in the world, and there are a lot of games that are sort of more artsy. One thing that I do want to sort of talk about, again, I don't know the most about this, maybe Catherine might even know more because she just spent hours and hours watching video essays, but when we talk about the artistic value of games and sort of what artistic value games can have, there's a lot more to it than just like the writing. Similarly to how if you're studying like film or you're studying like a specific film, you can't just be looking at the writing or the dialogue that's being presented. You should also be looking at stuff like the direction. So what camera and what framing is being chosen? What's the palette that's being chosen? A lot of those aspects also carry over into video games. And then there's also a really, really interesting sort of narrative of how do the actual in-game mechanics. So my mechanics, we kind of just mean like the things inside the game that make the game work, or like if that makes sense. How does that also sort of contribute to the artistic message? So for example, one game that I've played recently and I've been a really big fan of is this indie game called Darkest Dungeon, and basically it's a game where you get some adventurers and you take them down to this really grueling awful dungeon and you fight monsters and stuff. But the thing is, unlike a lot of other games where, well, like a lot of similar games where it's like really fun and happy, you know, these are the heroes that you've chosen to like go and free this area of these like wretched monsters, right? It's very punishing, firstly. Like a lot of your heroes will die and a lot of them will get like literal psychological issues. Like a lot of them will get depressed, a lot of them will get PTSD, they'll become like maniacs and stuff like that. And the actual mechanics of the game, basically, I won't talk too much about this, but in short, it gives you a really sort of more interesting moral question, where if you sacrifice your morality and you basically just hire a bunch of fresh new recruits and basically take them into the lowest levels of the dungeon and basically make them all, you know, you might kill a lot of them and a lot of them are going to come out like psychologically scarred, and then you literally just dump them and get rid of them, that's actually the most profitable way to play the game, and that's the way where you're going to benefit the most, and it's also the easiest way to play the game. But obviously, if you actually think about the morals, and you think about the fact that you're like exploiting a lot of these bright-eyed, you know, like eager travelers, and just completely like dooming their lives, it's just a really interesting sort of idea or narrative.
So obviously the fact that games are art forms is one reason to play them. They provide entertainment value, and also you can appreciate the effort and the art piece in the end. That's what it is. But then there's also, I guess you could call them, darker reasons why people play games. So people might be addicted to video games, or maybe they're using them as a form of escapism. So I guess I'll talk about escapism first. I guess a lot of people don't necessarily have great lives. They may not like their current situation, whether it's a social or academic or whatever, just their current situation in life. I think there's a decent amount of people who aren't really satisfied, and where others, as adults, may turn to like alcohol or drugs to escape reality.
I think what's most
accessible to kids are video games, because, you know, they sit in front of the computer and they just play the game and they forget about reality. They just focus on the character, especially since video games can be so engrossing. You get connected to the character. It can feel like it's almost you, and you can really focus your attention on it completely. And I guess that was the idea behind, like, Second Life. I think that was probably one of the biggest examples of a video game being used for escapism, where people just played that game and ignored their real life because their real life wasn't that great.
Sorry, can you just fill us in? What is the Second Life you speak of?
Yeah, so Second Life, it was this... I think it still is a game, to be honest, although I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I've gotten ads for it, so it still exists.
It's definitely not as popular, though. But it was this game kind of where you just interacted with other people on a game server, and you basically just lived a second life. So you'd get a fake a job in the game, you would earn income in the game, start a family in the game, buy houses in the game, and basically everything you could do in your normal life, you would do in this virtual second life. And obviously you could restart, or you could buy yourself a better life in that game, and it was really addicting because people could use it to escape reality. So I guess, yeah, that's the most popular case, but you can really do it with any game, I think, and I think it does happen with almost any game where you just focus on the character instead of yourself.
Interestingly enough, I also think that sort of escapism is something that, like, okay, I did like a sort of an ITGS project on dating games, so I know a decent amount about them, but like that's very much in some of the attitude that I've come across cases where like people who do play these dating games have like literally married the characters. So I mean, like there are sites online that will give you like a marriage certificate, not a real one, but you know, they'll give you something where they said, oh, like you can marry, say, your like mystic messenger boyfriend, or like they genuinely feel guilty about dating real life people because they have formed like parasocial bonds with these fictional characters through the interactive medium of video gaming. But so, I mean, we've heard a lot of, like, sort of reasons about, like, this escapism stuff, and I think, Thomas, you were mentioning stuff about how, like, kids might do it because they can't turn to drugs. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, video game addiction, I think that it's something that has been brought up a decent amount in the media. I've definitely heard my mom worry about it sometimes with you, John. So, like, let's talk about it. Sort of, is it a big issue, and sort of how do we help people who are addicted to video games?
I think that it is sort of oftentimes reported as a bigger issue than it actually is, but that's not to say that like it can have really big effects, right? So I believe it was in South Korea, there was this couple who let their child die because they were like really obsessed over this game, and they literally didn't attend to the basic needs of like feeding and like giving water to their child. So, you know, there's stuff like that. So as for actual mechanisms for which like games can be addictive, we already talked about sort of like you might be going into a game wanting to sort of escape from your real life, and that's one part. But there are obviously a lot of sort of mechanisms or things that make it so that games are kind of inherently addictive, or a lot of developers want their games to either A, be like basically outright addictive, or like really engrossing, right? And that, well, obviously that makes sense. If you can't get people to enjoy and want to completely play your game, then that means that you're probably going to get less really high reviews. That means you're probably going to get less money actually buying your game and actually, you know, making it a lucrative product. But yeah, so there are a lot of sort of aspects. There was a video quite a while ago, I believe it was by Game Theory or the Game Theorists, on how a lot of mobile apps with, like, so a lot of mobile games, free mobile games, will have systems that are like stamina systems, which basically means after you play a certain amount, you have to wait for that to regenerate, or you have to pay money to sort of make that resource regenerate, and you need to basically consume that resource to play the game. So talking about how, like, while you're waiting for that, or it basically forces your moderation, and every time you're waiting for that resource to regenerate, you're thinking more and more about that game, and you want to sort of play that game. So that kind of encourages the cycle where you want to play the game and you might spend money on the game, right? Like, on a more basic level, just the same things that make a game fun, or that make a game really sort of enthralling, I hope I'm using that word correctly, or like really sort of immersive and stuff like that, can also equally be mechanisms that make people addicted to the game.
So a lot of people might not know if they're actually addicted to video games. Like, maybe they think they might be, but they don't really know how to check. And as someone who has been addicted to video games in the past, I think maybe I can speak about some of the signs that you may be addicted to video games. So the biggest one, I think, is if you start losing a lot of sleep. So if you're addicted to video games, you're going to be playing them a lot, and like a lot. So chances are you're going to start losing sleep. Because instead of sleeping, you're going to be playing video games, and you'll only really stop once you're kind of like passing out and you can't go anymore. So in my opinion, that's like one of the biggest first signs. And then there's also becoming like more stressed out. So I think there's this quote by Jeff Bezos that says that stress comes from the things that you're ignoring. So if you're playing a lot of video games, and if you're addicted, you're going to be ignoring a lot of things because you're going to be playing the games instead. And as a result, chances are you're going to become more stressed out about things. So you're not going to be finishing like projects and stuff like that. And as a result, you'll probably feel much more stressed out, unless you just don't care. But I think a lot of people eventually start to care about like the fact that they're missing assignment deadlines, or aren't doing their chores and like that, and the parents are getting angry.
Okay, I feel like I need to put sort of a legal statement saying here that we are not doctors.
Oh,
we
absolutely.
Like, diagnose.
I'm a doctor.
Except
okay,
for Thomas.
Thomas is a doctor.
My mail is addressed to me as Dr. Thomas Michael Swinton.
That is actually true. But anyway, this moving on, right? One question I do have for you on that sort of note, Thomas, is, are there specific sort of traits or differences that you can tell us, sort of talking about what might differentiate someone who is actually addicted to video games versus someone who, you know, just likes video games a lot and plays them a lot?
So I think the difference is, I would say, if like the things that I mentioned, so like the stress or like lack of sleep, if those like start really occurring all of a sudden or get worsened than like what you were in the past, I think that's I guess that could be one sign. But other than that, I can't really think of any, because they're really similar.
If I can just quickly say something, I don't think it's like an on-off switch thing, like either you are or you aren't addicted. It's really sort of like, there's a spectrum in terms of like how much you're interested in video games and how many games do you play, how invested are you, how important are games to you. And the point at which it becomes addiction, or at least something that you should care about, is at the point when it starts being like actively negative to your life. So I think that usually when we talk about addictions, we talk about things that like you can't stop doing or you have difficulty stopping it. And it becomes a habit that's actively like negative. So if you are, for example, playing so many games that it's actively being detrimental to your relationships or to your responsibilities or to, you know, your sleep schedule, then it becomes a destructive addiction. If you're able to play a lot of games but still, you know, you're able to keep a healthy social life, you're able to keep yourself healthy and happy and like otherwise, you know, go to your job or like whatever, then that, even if you're still playing a lot of games, you're really invested, that would still be considered healthy, if you guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
think Catherine.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Dr. Thomas, Dr. Swintle.
Dr. Thomas. I have the supporting documentation for that, by the way. But, okay, I think Catherine's absolutely right. Like, if you just can't stop, like if you have to play video games and you can't stop for like a week, for example, I think that's just like the sign that you're addicted.
By the way, I'm not cutting out the Dr. Thomas part. I'm keeping that.
Keeping Dr. Thomas.
It's true.
Okay.
It actually is true. That's the scary part.
I wonder if it's fraud though.
So now that we've talked a little bit about how, you know, your brain could be negatively impacted by video games in the form of addiction, we can also talk about other possible negative impacts on the brain. I think that we've heard a lot about video game violence, very popular, like, you know, middle-aged mom talking point. Let's hear a little bit about, you know, do video games cause violence, or is it bad to have sort of kind like ethically wrong things in video games?
Okay, I'm just going to start us off here by saying that this is sort of a topic that I'm pretty passionate about, and in so far as saying that, I think the answer is a really, really obvious no if you actually objectively look at all the evidence that has been presented. If you actually look at a lot of the studies, and there are studies, admittedly, that have concluded that to some extent video games can cause violence, or they can cause like an individual to act more aggressively, there are a lot of really, really sketchy sort of aspects of the research. One example is just sort of what is being measured as aggression. So I've read that a lot of studies literally use really, really weird and seemingly arbitrary or seemingly like insignificant measures of what is aggression. So one that I saw was literally like your tolerance to spicy foods, or sort of your reaction after eating a spicy food, and sort of really, really weird niche sort of things like that. And that's what they're trying to use to make this conclusion, or to arrive to the conclusion that like scientifically proven video games or violent video games can make people more violent.
One thing I will say is that like video games, I do feel like they definitely, to some extent, like, desensitize people to violence. Because, like, especially since a lot of them nowadays are really, like, immersive games, and you can feel like you're the character sometimes. And a lot of them are also, you know, shooting games. So I feel like they definitely, well, familiarize people with this. It's still obviously very different than real-world violence, but nonetheless, it's like shooting someone. So people do that over and over again, and it kind of just becomes completely normal. So I feel like, to some extent, it definitely does desensitize people, like the players, to violence. And as a result, even though this violence is completely different, or largely different than real-world violence, I do think that maybe in that way, it could be in some way contributing to real-world violence by making people less sensitive to it.
Just something similar, it's actually interesting, another sort of thing that a lot of people have talked about, other than just like how video games are violent, is that video games oftentimes are not the greatest sort of at depicting women, especially female bodies. So if we're talking a little bit about sexualization and objectification, I think we can think of lots of characters traditionally who might have been depicted in an unrealistic or like sort of objectifying way. Lara Croft is the main one from Tomb Raider, but generally speaking, I think I've had a lot of discussions with John about this, where we vehemently disagree, but you know, I'm not the expert because I don't play a lot of these games personally, but stuff like League of Legends, I have noticed there is more sexualization of female characters versus male characters, probably because the vast majority of players are heterosexual males. So that makes some sense in terms of just like, targeting your audience members. Like, but there is definitely a certain amount of like, hey, does what kind of effect does this have on not only like female female players, but just like in general on gamers? How does this change your perception of women? I did a bit of research, and a lot of it is like kind of inconclusive. I did see a study that said that there didn't seem to be much of an impact on sort of self-image, so like women who saw these characters or played games with these characters didn't really feel bad about themselves afterwards. But I also read another study that sort of said that it actually increased sexual harassment or like sexually harassing behavior in players, and weirdly enough this is true for all genders, so women were actually more likely to be sexist to other women after playing games in which they were playing like sexualized female characters, or they were playing around sexualized female characters. So, any opinions on this? Sort of, is this a problem? Should we change it?
I just think that, I don't know, I don't think it's going to change, to be honest. Unless, like, social norms change among, like, as you said, most players, I think, are heterosexual males of, like, many of the games. So unless their preferences change, I don't think the other things will, the sexualization of females will really change. Because, I mean, it's in the end a factor that really does attract these players to the game, or at least keeps them playing. And it's kind of like a, I wouldn't say it's necessarily like a big selling point, because I don't think it is for most players, but it definitely is something that, makes them like or enjoy the game. And there's money in that.
In terms of, especially, I feel like the gaming community overall is not the greatest towards like non-male players. For example, if you look at the professional gaming world, I feel for the most part is heavily like, yes, East Asian, but also like very white, right? There aren't a lot of women at all. And even in the developer world, so if we're talking about just like actual industry, it's oftentimes very closed towards women. So I read a Kotaku investigation of Riot that interviewed 23 female employees and 3 male employees, and they talked about how there was a sort of very much a culture of like sort of almost a frat bro culture there that was very difficult for female employees to break into, and how a lot of female employees weren't able to jive with the culture because they felt that the image of a gamer was very male, and they actually had during their interview processes, they had like interviewers who were like quizzing them about their games that they claimed to be playing as if like they thought that they weren't really playing it. I think one female interviewee actually mentioned that she talked to her male coworkers about this afterwards, and they were like completely baffled because they were saying that this never this didn't happen to them at all.
Okay, Riot Games is an awful company in terms of, yes, there is a very, very sort of toxic work culture there, but one, I don't necessarily think that that's indicative of like video game developers as a whole, though I mean you could make a case, and I wouldn't really, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you could say that that's like not a bad example of like the industry and the culture that's displayed by like in video game developing studios in general. But when you're talking about the idea of like there aren't a lot of women in the pro scene, I think that that, yes, is a bit of an issue, and I think that there are some women who can probably go pro or whatever, but might be denied a chance because of like stereotypes and stuff like that. But at the same time, it is also important to realize that there are just very, very, very few women who play games to a high level, and I think that that's because there are just a lot less women who play games in general, and I think that's for any multitude of reasons. You know, we can talk about like social stigmas and stuff like that, and how video games, like you said, is seen as like generally a guyish thing or like a male thing, right? And why, and that might mean, even if there are like a comparable amount of people of like men and women who play video games, that might mean that less women are actually going to be like incentivized, or they're going to be disincentivized from putting in the time to actually like get really good and play at like the highest levels of competition. So I think that I totally agree with Thomas when he says one thing we could just do is like let it naturally improve. I think that if you are talking about sort of like initiatives to like add or like give more women a chance, you could also look at like affirmative action or like equitable things, sort of like you see in a lot of big tech companies. So like you can look at like I believe Google is one of the bigger like examples of this. I believe other tech firms also do this, but I'm just not completely sure, so I don't want to really like mention them as examples, where you try to ensure that a certain percentage of your staff is female, or like, you know, a certain minority. And I think that that could also be a very, you know, viable sort of initiative.
Okay, so we discussed a lot about video games and like sort of niche topics. Let's talk a little bit about broadly, you know, from the noob's perspective, the unacquainted with video games. How are video games perceived? Should I be explaining this because I am like the resident uneducated person? Or
sure.
Okay, I think that largely I see a perception of video games is very much I'm going to say that I do actually think that video games are kind of trendy now. Like, at least out of the people I know, a lot of them do play video games, or they play some form of, like, even if you say mobile is not valid, you know, there's quite a few people who play mobile games, and it's very mainstream. Obviously, stuff like, you know, the more technical stuff, like League of Legends talking about which build is best and, like, watching esports, that's not exactly mainstream, but for the most part, I do see a certain casual acceptance of games, especially nowadays.
Okay, yeah. I think I agree, but I think that, if we go a few years back, or even still now, to a definitely significant extent, I think that there is sort of this, narrative or this belief that like video games are just like dumb, not intellectual sort of pieces of entertainment, if that makes sense. Like, I think there are quite a few people who would be a bit surprised or confused if you were to proclaim that video games are an art form. And you know, I think that there has been a lot even recently of outrage of sort of declaring esports as like a legitimate sport, or like being very confused by the fact that people can make money and have an actual career by playing video games. And I'm not referring to like YouTubers or people who play video games, but they're mainly making money off of sort of marketing or broadcasting their personality, but specifically people who their careers are being good at video games, so like pro players. So Thomas, do you want to sort of jump in here?
I feel like a lot of those like criticisms, or they always come, or the majority of them come from people who aren't necessarily acquainted with games. So whether that's like, I guess another, our previous generation, and like our parents or something like that, or whether it's like, I guess kids that just don't play games. I feel like if you do actually play games, whether it's like casually or not, a lot of the time you'll kind of like accept the fact that and understand why esports is a thing and why they get paid for just being good at the games.
So before we go any further, let's just give a quick explanation of what exactly are esports, because we've used the term a few times now, and you know, some people might not be too familiar with that with what that means. So Thomas, you want to sort of give us the introduction?
Yes. So esports, what are they? Who is an esporter? Well, basically, esports, it's the sports section of games. So people, different teams play a certain game against each other competitively. There's tournaments, and there's just, I guess, casual games against each other and stuff like that. And basically, the players on each of these games is teams. They train for hours and hours, as if they were they were like a football athlete, for example, except instead of like throwing the ball and stuff like that, they train their reaction time in the game and their skills.
Yeah. And there are like organized official sort of leagues for these things, similar to like how you have the NHL, for example, for hockey. You could have like the LCS for League of Legends in North America, for example. So I think that's a decent enough like quick introduction for those of you who might not know exactly what esports is as a term. I'm just going to go into this quickly by saying, I think that there, like I was talking about previously, there has been like quite a bit of discussion, maybe not like this year, but definitely in recent years, about like, should esports be considered a game? Sorry, should esports be considered a sport, with sort of, you know, as esports have become more popular, and also as certain sporting networks like ESPN have actually been broadcasting esports. So I'm going to say that I think that they should be considered a sport. And I think that one of the things that people have to understand that is that I don't think that is that when we get to the core of what a sport is, I don't think that we should have the definition be entangled with the necessity for like physical exercise or like physical exertion.
And even if we do like use that definition, or even if that is kind of like what's accepted as a society when defining a sport, if you think about it, like games do require a lot of physical fitness, not only for in well, okay. maybe not a it's a different type of physical fitness in terms of like reaction time and also sometimes endurance, depends on the game. So it does require some level of, you know, physical ability.
Yeah, so I think that even, like, okay, I think Thomas gives an interesting case there, but even if we, like, again, talk about should they, like, require sort of, you know, physical exertion, I think that a lot of sports that have existed and that we have considered, or activities that we have considered to be sports, have had this sort of requirement or have had this aspect of physical exertion. But I think that what's more core is the element of competitiveness and like a clear sort of win-fail state, if that makes sense. So, you know, because that's what we think about for sports and competing in sports. You know, there is a clear victor and a clear loser, I guess, in every single thing that's considered a sport. That's why you can't have like, you know, a physical activity like just randomly chopping down a tree be a sport. Running in and of itself isn't a sport, but like, having the race, you know, is the sport because it introduces the competitive element.
My question then is, should something like chess be considered a sport? Because that has the exact same stuff you talked about.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of different sort of interpretations. I'm curious to hear what you would say. I think it is a sport, and I think that, like, there have been organizations, so the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, has gone out and classified chess as being officially a sport. I do definitely think that, you know, chess should be considered a sport. I'm curious to hear your takes.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I've always considered physical activity to be quite important in terms of determining what is and what isn't a sport, because by that sort of the idea that anything with a win and fail, like, you know, fail state is a sport, then you could technically say something like debate is a sport.
Is a sport.
Is it a sport? I don't consider it a sport. Well, I should put it as my active cast hours then. Okay, but like, you know, so I feel like it gets very broad in terms of what is and what isn't a sport, and I've always related sports with sort of athleticism, with sort of physical prowess. But it is interesting to think of that changing, and I don't think I'm really committed to either side, so I would absolutely be open to changing my mind on that.
I think, well, because if you do, like, I do agree that a lot of the time we have considered, like, physical ability or physical activity as part of something being defined a sport, but then where do we, I guess, what amount of physical activity permits something to be considered a sport? Like, for example, I'm pretty sure that shooting, like from like a pellet gun or like a gun at a target, I'm pretty sure that's a sport. Right. In like biathlon or triathlon, whatever it's called, and
or just shooting by itself, I think is also considered a sport.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, okay, so you hold the gun, but it's all about aiming and your, I guess, skill with that tool. So there's not a lot of, like, endurance or physical ability in the traditional sense involved, but there's stuff like your reaction, I guess, and I don't know what other things are necessary to shoot a gun at a target, but it seems like the threshold of, like, the amount of physical activity involved is quite minimal compared to other things that we consider sports, like basketball, for example. The thing that stops me from, I guess, using physical activity as part of the definition for a sport is the fact that what would you define as ample physical activity and what wouldn't be?
Okay, yeah, I think those are both very sort of valid opinions and approaches and takes. I think that, like, okay, I think that if we take what Cavern said into consideration, I actually, you know, hearing what you said, I'm leaning a bit more towards that side of things, but I think that even if we sort of go more broad than this discussion of should it be officially categorized as a sport, there are a lot of elements that, like, the discussion isn't necessarily about whether it is quote-unquote a sport or not, but whether sort of the distribution and the competitive sort of, you know, the scale of these esports tournaments and stuff is sort of justified, or if it makes sense or not, right? Or if it's valid, I guess, almost. So what I would say for that, like, even even further than sort of the talking about like physical exertion and stuff like that, is the, I think that video games and sort of like games in general, and by games I mean like also like sport, sorry, like chess, oftentimes have a lot of things that like contribute to the competitive nature. So I think everyone is familiar with the fact that chess is a very sort of intellectual activity, or a very sort of intellectual game where it's very strategic. It's all about sort of thinking ahead, thinking what is your opponent going to do. I think that there are a lot more sort of elements of that in video games as well, where it's like, yeah, okay, if you're playing hockey, there are a lot of portions of like, hey, being able to communicate with your team, even if it's not like literal communication, but knowing what to do. There's stuff about like knowing where to position so you can like intercept like you know, their offense players and stuff like that. But when you look at video games, and again, I'm just going to use League as an example here because it's the thing I'm the most well acquainted with, and the amount of thinking that is required. You need to think about like how specific minions are going to interact with each other and how that's going to create a specific wave state like 2 minutes in the future. You need to be thinking about where you should be taking your fights. You need to be thinking about when you're strong compared to the opponent team if you should be looking to fight. Even like more generally, you need to be thinking about what gold, with this gold that I have, what is the most efficient like items that I can buy? And I think that that's really cool. And even before you get into a game, you have the draft phase where you're picking specific characters and banning specific characters so that both teams can't pick those characters. And you're thinking about basically drafting and creating a composition of characters that can work really well in either like by itself or into the opponent team. And I think that a lot of people who just sort of brand this as like some dumb activity that you do for like leisure or for entertainment misses out on the fact that there are a lot of very sort of tactical, or a lot of very sort of, I don't want to say intellectual because that makes me sound like a snob, but like decisions and things like that with woven within like the fabrics or the very like act of playing these games.
I think that was a good conversation. Lots of stuff discussed, right? We did go a little bit over, so unfortunately we're only going to take two questions. You know, if we didn't take your questions, so sorry about that. Hopefully you guys will send in other ones.
We don't like you.
Oh no, Thomas.
Okay.
That's what it means.
So let's start off. You guys played any good video games recently?
Thomas, do you want to start?
Yeah, so I played the new Marvel game that just came out yesterday or today or whatever. It's called Avengers. It's basically like an RPG, like a role-playing game, but you're like assembling a team of the Avengers, and you just like beat the crap out of like villains and stuff like that. And it's like a Marvel movie, except you do what you want. And it has a better story than a Marvel movie.
No shade, okay. Jonathan?
You know what, I'm just going to plug the same game that I already talked about earlier, which is Darkest Dungeon. And so, not to talk too much about it, it's just a really, really good game. Like, I literally ended up playing, like, 6 to 7 hours every single day for, like, a week until I finished the game.
Worrying?
Worrying, but the game's really, really good. I really highly recommend you check it out. A lot of the mechanics, both in terms of, like, the morality and stuff like that, like I talked about earlier, but just also just in terms of pure gameplay mechanics, are very, very interesting and make the game very, very fun, and at least to me, it never really felt repetitive. So, Catherine, do you have any games that you play?
Yeah, my favorite game is the one after you lose internet and you're just a little dinosaur. You jump over cacti. I think that was really enthralling. Okay. No. Now, I think this is the most important question we were sent in. Thomas, which Mawtwin is better and justify?
So, which Mawtwin is better and justify? Okay, so this question is, there's a very clear answer, but let me just quickly talk to you about the state of the Canadian government. So I think there's a lot of issues that are going on right now, and I think that people really have
okay,
to
thank
be
you,
educated.
Dr. Thomas. We're just going to move on. Okay, so now we're going to move on to media recommendations, and again, like last episode, we don't really have that much time, so we're just going to settle for, you know, this might actually be the norm. We might just do the guest's medium recommendations from now on, but Mr. Doctor, what the fuck? Mr. Dr. Tom Swintle, if you'd like to give us some media that you've been enjoying recently, a book, a film, a game, and, you know, I mean, I guess you already answered that, but, like, anything that you would like to recommend to everyone.
Yeah, so I would recommend a TV show to everyone. And this is a great TV show if you play video games. So I'd recommend Peaky Blinders. It's this TV show where like a bunch of like a British dudes like beat the crap out of like other people. So it's like a video game, right? With all like the violent aspects of a video game that like a person may enjoy put into a movie. So it's like once you're tired of playing the video game, then you can just go and watch the movie and have the same kind of, I guess people do find kind of like violent sets satisfactory sometimes. I don't, but I'm just saying people who do like that in video games, they would love this show.
Yeah, Thomas could understand, but he definitely would not feel those
sentiments. I do not like
himself.
Violence. Uh-huh. No,
definitely not.
It grosses
all.
Me out.
A committed
I'm a pacifist. I'm a pacifist.
Exactly. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in this week. We'd love to hear your comments. Tell us, you know, criticisms, things you liked. If you guys want to be part of an episode, if you guys want to show up as a guest, or if there's a topic you'd like to hear us discuss, you know, please DM us at 3p3bc.podcast.
So thank you guys again so much for listening, and we hope to see you next time.
Peace!